Hi there. Good evening. Welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626, and on the web at jimbotalk.net. It's about that time for colleges to get thoroughly underway with the old fall semester. We had, of course, recently a discussion about the U.S. News and World Report annual issue on America's Best Colleges, a very enlightening program, but not enough, certainly, for the entire story. Because, quite frankly, there are a lot of stresses that go with the choice of which college, or how expensive a college, how tough a college, or any college. Not everybody should go to college. Sometimes the stresses can tear a family apart, and we're talking tonight with all the aspects of this with educational consultant Stephen Roy Goodman. He is co-author with Dr. Andrea Lehman of College Admissions Together. It takes a family. It's in paperback from Capital Books, and Mr. Goodman's website is topcolleges.com. Good evening, and thanks for being on the Jim Bohannon Show.
Well, thank you, Jim. Good to be here.
Now, first of all, let's take a look at this notion of how it affects a family. I know only my own experience, and there wasn't really much stress. There were several college choices, and I opted for one, and everybody was happy. We didn't have a lot of money, but I got some financial aid, and then that was pretty much the end of that particular discussion. What kind of stresses do some families encounter as this choice is made?
Well, there are a number of stresses. The first stress is the issue of money. The second stress is the issue of distance from home. Another stress may be, what should my student do for a major? Another stress might be whether or not to go to a college that mom went to or that dad went to. There are a number of schools that, those are some of the main choices.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you should go where you can. I mean, if you're going to go to college, you should get the best deal you can. That doesn't mean that everybody should go to Harvard or Yale necessarily, does it?
No, but some people will only want Harvard or Yale. In fact, one of the things that I try to do in my seminars and that I try to do in my book is to try to figure out what people's objectives really are. And I ask families directly, what are you looking to do? Are you looking for prestige? Are you looking to be near a city? Are you looking to be in a rural area? Are you looking to go to a place where you can study engineering? What's the purpose of this education? And a lot of people really don't know that. And I think it's really important to ask people and to have discussions about that. And in fact, my book is about helping families to kind of come together while they have these discussions. Because one of the things that's interesting, I think, is that families, just because you're a family doesn't mean that everybody agrees. A mother might want something, a father might want something, and a student might want something, but those things may be quite different from one another.
And indeed, of course, this comes just this critical decision just at the time that the apron strings are being torn, or at least certainly should be. Independence is coming along, but it's not complete yet. As this decision is being made, presumably in high school, you probably have a young person who can drive. He may or may not have yet reached the point where he can vote, and if they've waited that long, it's probably a little bit too long. Drinking legally, still further down the line. Society itself can't decide just how adult these people are, so it's got to be tough for the parents to decide if there is a significant difference. To what extent is this my child, and to what extent is this a young adult who deserves freedom to act?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, one of the key things is, as a society, we're not really clear about that. One of the things that I try to do is explain to people that, to adults, that you're really trying to launch your child. You're trying to make sure that you're raising a child that will be an adult who you want to spend time with later on. We have an old expression in admissions about roots and wings, and that you want to give students the roots to be grounded wherever they're, you know, where they come from, and then the wings to go forward and to be adventurous and to try things and to explore the world and to make the contributions to the world that they can make.
1-866-50-JIMBO is our number, 1-866-505-4626. Does this sound like something that is happening in your family or has happened in your family or is about to happen in your family? We'd love to hear from you and your thoughts tonight about college admissions together. It takes a family with Dr. Stephen Roy Goodman. 1-866-50-JIMBO is our number. Now, as you approach this thing, what is the appropriate time, in your view, for most families to start to talk about this?
I think that most families should begin speaking about this when the student is in eighth or ninth grade. And before everybody in America says, oh my gosh, that's too early, I think it's really important to look at this as a beginning discussion. And it's not just that there's going to be one grand discussion and then it's all over. I think this is a process. And I think families need to have serious discussions starting at the beginning of high school when you're doing college planning. And let me add one thing. For people who are saving money for college, many of those families, including mine and including many families who I counsel, that begins when a student is born.
Which is not a bad idea, certainly, obviously, in terms of saving money and the like. College is one of those areas of life that has undergone some pretty significant inflation. It's almost up there with healthcare, I suppose, in that regard. And I know that you've had some thoughts about that, and before we even look at financial aid and that sort of thing, there was something that you wrote in the Patriot News, time to padlock college presidents' pay, and namely, I gather that you feel the salary cap on corporate CEOs who accept federal bailout money should also apply to university presidents, is that right?
Well, I do think that one of the key problems is that American families are upset about the cost of college. And, of course, then the reasonable question is, well, why do college costs keep going up? Why do costs rise and rise and rise and rise? And there are lots of explanations. One, you know, you can argue that the cost of technology keeps rising, generating increased tuition at universities. You can argue that increased administrator pay does. You can argue that the growth of the administrations, not just the salaries, but the numbers of administrators at colleges keep going. Or you can make the argument that simply what's happening is that universities raise tuition because they can. And if there's no federal law or local law that says that universities can't keep collecting money and just keeping it in a rainy day fund, which somehow never gets used, and they keep raising and raising and raising tuition, then you could look at all those arguments. And so one of the things that I've talked about repeatedly is presidential pay, because I think what it does is it sends the wrong message to young people and to families, because the university world is, in my view, is an important segment of American society. And we should value our universities and cherish our universities as national resources. And if all of a sudden these simply become just like any other entity, and to some extent I think they already have, but if in fact it continues, then I think there's going to be an erosion of support for universities.
1-866-50-JIMBO is the number, 1-866-50-5466, with Stephen Roy Goodman, co-author of the book College Admissions Together. It takes a family, and this is a critical step, obviously. You're launching your child through the vehicle that will, to a great extent, determine how successful your child is. And the College Admissions Together is in paperback from Capital Books, 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626 on the Jimbo Hannon Show. And we have Patty calling in from Enid, Oklahoma. Hello, Patty.
Hello. I would just like to ask a question. I'm 50-plus. I believe now when you take a look at college, and we have one that just entered and one that just graduated, it's gotten to be such a commercialization that we need to stop and take a look and hold universities responsible for getting these kids in and out in a timely manner, these young adults, rather than adding so much on every year. And I'd like to know what your guest has to say about that.
Well, Patty, thank you for the call. I absolutely agree with you. I think that we have a tremendous problem. I don't know if you know the statistic on this, but 54% of Americans who begin college will not have a degree. 54%, only 54% of students who begin college will have a degree within 6 years. So that means that 46...
Within 6 years?
Six years, that's right.
Wow.
Not 4 years, 6 years. So that means that we are now using a benchmark of 6 years for four-year schools, And with that benchmark, we're still only getting a graduation rate of 54%.
That I find remarkable. Now, what's happening here? Are people dawdling? Are they taking a lighter course load because they have to work? Are schools carrying along people who should probably just simply be told to go home? You're not college material. What's going on here?
Well, again, it depends who you ask. I think that what's going on is that universities are there's very little economic incentive to get students out the door, because remember, universities collect tuition dollars, and not only do they collect tuition dollars from you, they effectively collect tuition dollars from Patty and her family in the form of loans as well. Let's say Patty or her son or daughter is taking out a loan, the university is still getting the money. So there's very little incentive to keep down the costs. Moreover, I think that unfortunately not all our high schools are really up to standards. And so what's happening is that there are a lot of students in college who simply don't have the skills to succeed and simply need more time to succeed.
More to come. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. We'd like to hear from you as we talk with our guest, Stephen Roy Goodman, the co-author of College Admissions Together in paperback from Capital Books. We'll be back with more of your calls after these messages. It's the Jimbo Hannon Show. We're glad you're with us at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. We're talking tonight with Stephen Roy Goodman, who is the co-author of College Admissions Together, It Takes a Family, in paperback from Capital Books. Let us speak to Brian in Butte, Montana. Hello, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
We're well, thank you.
I had a quick question for Stephen. I was wondering if he thought that the 54% graduation rate over 6 years was skewed at all by the increased numbers of people attending college, at least in the first, 1 or 2 years, and then not completing.
Well, yes, and I think that's a good question. There are a lot of reasons for this, and unfortunately, some of these reasons are conflict with one another. There's another statistic that might help us as we have this discussion. Only 25% of those who started a four-year institution, 25% of those who started a four-year institution end up transferring. So some people end up at the wrong college. Now, why do they end up at the wrong college? Well, they end up at the wrong college perhaps because they didn't think through it carefully. Maybe they end up at the wrong college because they weren't academically qualified. Maybe they end up at the wrong school because it's the wrong fit for them. There are any number of reasons why. But you're right, some people do try some courses and then don't continue. But I think we've got competing issues here. On one hand, we want to encourage people to go to school. We want to encourage people to get an education. We want to encourage people to try things that they haven't done. In fact, that's the whole reason for education in the first place, right? To give people a leg up and to try new things and to learn new things. But at some point, we have to figure out how to make sure that people complete what it is that they begin to attempt to complete.
We should also take note that although we certainly encourage people to get an education, a very important thing in this 21st century, it isn't necessarily a good idea for everyone to get a college education. We have certainly a crying need for computer programmers, for paralegals, for health technicians of various types, for dental assistants, nurses, although nurses, of course, really do go with a bachelor's degree, but there are various things short of a full-fledged bachelor's degree, which can provide a very meaningful, productive, and lucrative income. For that matter, being a plumber or an electrician may not have a lot of cachet attached to it, but I can guarantee you that they don't come cheap. And I'm wondering the extent to which, maybe as we talk certainly about the family involvement here, the extent to which some students may go to college because otherwise mom and dad would be embarrassed at the country club.
Well, Jim, mothers and dads are embarrassed not only at the country club, but also at the corner store. Moms in debt, some of this, you're right, is absolutely driven by parents who are either pushing their kids to be something they're not, or are pushing students to try things that are going to satisfy the parental desires of mom and dad. Look, not all moms and dads are bad. In fact, you know, 99% of moms and dads are good and are trying to do the best for their kids. But sometimes kids aren't, most of the time, if not all the time, kids are not their parents, and they really need to do things that make that are good for their own lives. Let's take your electrician or plumber example. You're right that some parents really don't want to be able to say that my son is a plumber. They would rather say that my son is a doctor. And that's true, but let's face it, not everybody can be a doctor. And I think as a society, we should encourage people to do what it is that they like to do. One of my favorite things that I do in my talks is to explain to people that I think that the secret to college admissions, if there's such a secret, is to do what you like to do and do it a lot. Let me repeat that. Do what you like to do and do a lot of it, because you're going to be good at it. You're going to enjoy it, and then over time, it's going to become you, and you're going to become that thing, whatever that field is, and you're going to enjoy it, you're going to contribute to the world, and in my view, that's the best that you can possibly do.
And we should also keep in mind, too, that in this day and age, with technology changing so rapidly, if you are 22 today, the job that you have when you're 62, 40 years down the road, 2049, that job probably hasn't even been invented yet, much less there for you to train on. So even the best charted course in the 21st century is one that's going to have a lot of zigs and zags that are unanticipated.
Jim, you're absolutely right. And the zig and the zag, I think the way you prepare for the zig and the zag is to use your college degree and use your college education as a way to learn to think and to be creative and to look at the world in ways that you hadn't done before. In fact, that's one of the reasons that I like a university, that I like a broad university education once you're there, because it does teach you and give you the tools necessary to combine thoughts and combine different views from different disciplines. Because who knows what the world is going to be like in 20 years or 30 years. But what we do know is that what people can do to prepare now is to learn how to think and to learn to read and to write and to be able to take disparate ideas from all walks of life and then to combine them in an interdisciplinary way. We know that that's going to be the future.
Let's say that mom and dad say one thing and my high school counselor says another.
Well, unfortunately, that happens a lot. And that's one of the reasons that I've been an independent educational consultant for the last 20 years, because I try to give students and parents an outside voice that they can go to when they want to try to reach their dreams if, in fact, somebody in their school may not, push that.
1-866-50-JIMBO, our number, 1-866-50-5426, and we do want to hear more of your stories, your thoughts, your questions, whether you be a student, a parent of a college student or a prospective college student, or whether you are involved in the educational process as a teacher or administrator. We'd love to hear your thoughts as well. As we talk with Stephen Roy Goodman, he is the co-author of College Admissions Together in paperback from Capital Books. More to come on The Bohannon Show from Westwood One. This is the Jim Bohannon Show. We're glad to have you with us tonight as we talk about a pretty critical step in the life of any family, and that is when the youngsters are preparing for that final stage of education, the real pathway to adulthood these days, out of which, of course, comes the basis. Certainly you can't become happy just through going to the right school, but I think you could probably deny yourself a lot of happiness by making a faulty decision in this regard. Stephen Roy Goodman, our guest, is an educational consultant, co-author of College Admissions Together in paperback from Capital Books. Let's talk with Paul. He's in Redmond, Washington. Hello, Paul.
Yeah, hello. Say, are we here?
Yes, you're on the radio. Go right ahead.
Yeah, well, my question is, I have a son that's a junior in high school and preparing for what's likely to be a sports scholarship. In the event he doesn't get that, what are our other options other than having $50,000 sitting in the bank to send him to college?
Well, the number one source of money for college is the college. And so, and I know that sounds like a funny answer, but the money's, the real money comes from the colleges. So if your son does not get a sports scholarship, well, let's take it another way. If your son is a good athlete, he's going to get a sports scholarship, not because the colleges like him, but because the colleges believe that his sports skills are such that he can play on a particular team.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately what this is about is trying to figure out, how are you satisfying the needs of the college? And so in your son's case, if his sports abilities are such, then he'll meet those needs. But let's say they don't. Then one of the key things that I advise my families to do is to look at colleges that traditionally don't have a lot of students from your area. So I believe you said you were from Washington State. Well,
actually, it's Oregon.
You said you're from Oregon?
Yes.
Okay.
He called in from Redmond, Washington, but the school in question, I guess, is Oregon.
Well, there aren't a lot of people from Oregon or Washington State, for that matter, who want to go to school in Oklahoma or want to go to school in Pennsylvania. Not that I'm opposed to Oregon or Washington State, but one of the things you have to look at is, are you willing to go to Oklahoma or are you willing to go to Pennsylvania to get an education, knowing that there's an economic incentive for a school in Pennsylvania or Oklahoma to give a good financial aid package to your son as an incentive for him to travel there.
I see.
So I know that sounds like very simple advice, but it's advice that I give a lot. And it's advice that a lot of people don't take to heart, because when was the last time you drove to Oklahoma just to have a sandwich? Of course you wouldn't do that. What you do where you live is, of course, you want things to be convenient for wherever you are. So if you're willing to go beyond a certain distance, the average American really only wants to have their son or daughter go to college within a 5-hour drive of home or a 6-hour drive of home, depending on where you live. And if you're willing to go beyond that, you can actually, depending on, of course, how academic your student is, you might be able to find yourself getting some attractive financial aid packages.
Great. Well, he's academically strong as well, but you need to have options, I think. And what you shared as far as going further away from home, as far as looking for a scholarship like that, that's interesting. Good information. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome, and good luck with it. Again, I'm not pushing Oklahoma or Pennsylvania inherently, but if you're willing to take a little bit of a ride in your car or on a bus or on a plane or on a train, I think you'll find that you'll have some more generous financial aid options a year from now.
All right. Good luck to you, Paul, and to your child as well. 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-50-54626. There are those, of course, for whom certain circumstances are the only choice to go to college. Those with very limited financial means, let's say you really play football well, but not well enough that you're a megastar, you get a scholarship to everywhere, but you get aid offer to go to East Algonquin A&P Remedial Tech, and it doesn't really offer precisely what you're looking for in a major, but they're going to pay for you to go to college. Some people, for example, go to service academies because of limited financial needs. Of course, to do that, you've got to be pretty academically prepared as well. But you're giving up, I think it's 4 years of your life to the military in exchange for that education. So there are circumstances, are there not, in which the best educational fit may be the only educational fit for your circumstances.
That's right, and everybody has their own individual circumstances. Some people can't travel because they have, maybe they're a caregiver for someone in their family. Some people can't travel because of economic circumstances. Other people can't travel because of psychological reasons. I mean, there are some people who just really need the emotional support of what's familiar. But one of the things that I think you really need to always get back to is what am I trying to achieve through this college education? What are my objectives? If the objective is to play the money game and to maximize the amount of money you're going to get from a university, you can do that. Another thing that you can do is you can try to maximize the number of majors that you have at a school to give yourself the most number of choices. The other thing that you can do is you can focus on certain types of job preparation. Or what you can try to do is, let's say you can say, I really want to be at a particular school because it's a party school, or I want to be at a particular type of school because I know that I want to work for a particular company or in a particular city, and this particular college has a leg up in terms of internships at that company or in that city. It depends what you're looking for.
More to come, 1-866-50-JIMBO. We're going to talk about enhancing that family discussion, the family aspect of college admissions together. We'll also take a look at some other decisions, timeline decisions, early decisions on enrollment, this sort of thing, the pros and cons of all of that in this critical matter of college admissions together. Our guest is the author, Stephen Roy Goodman. 1-866-50-JIMBO is our number. If you have a question or comment, we'll be right back here at Westwood One. Welcome back to the Jimbo Hannon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Our guest tonight is the man who has been looking so seriously at education for so many years in a variety of capacities, educational consultant Stephen Roy Goodman. He is the co-author of College Admissions Together, It Takes a Family. Now, timelines and competition. When you apply, with whom you're competing, and it is a competition because colleges have so many openings, and if there's a greater supply than there is demand, then the college is in the driver's seat and will be denying some admissions. So what about this notion of early admissions? I can get in, I can get locked in early on, I'm all set, I don't have to sweat it. Is that a good decision?
Well, it can be. You're right that the competition is particularly keen for a number of colleges, but I think it's also important to point out that there's a real difference between the top 100 colleges and universities in the United States and everybody else. For those 100 colleges, the competition is incredibly fierce, because you're right, it is a competition for seats in those 100 schools. So when you're dealing with admissions rates for some of those schools that are in the single digits, it's extremely important to consider what you can possibly do to maximize your chances of getting in. One of the ways that people do that is through early decision. Early decision is a plan under which you commit to the college and you say to College X, I love you, I promise I will go if I'm admitted. And in exchange for your undying love, the college agrees to essentially give you a break in admissions. Now, why would they give you a break in admissions? They give you a break in admissions because colleges are like people. They like to be loved. But more than that, colleges benefit from early decision because you've committed to going. And that means that now the college has almost 100% yield rate, what we call a yield rate, which means that if 5 students apply early decision and we admit 5 students, that means that the college now does not have to recruit 5 additional students. Those students are already locked in. And so it's beneficial from the college's perspective. Now, of course, your follow-up question would probably be, well, is it beneficial to the student? Well, it's beneficial to the student if the student really wants to go to that school. And if, in fact, the student is benefiting in some tangible way, and they would benefit in a tangible way by getting into a quote-unquote better school than they otherwise would, that's how that would be helpful.
Obviously, the extent to which this is helpful, then, is the extent to which you're locked in. But, of course, you can get locked in, and then suddenly you get the dream offer with the dream financial aid from the dream school that you just didn't even think was even in the running. Then what do? You're locked in.
That's exactly right. But there's a nuance there that I think might be important to mention, which is that you don't always get the second part of the dream that you just mentioned. A lot of times what happens is universities use early decision as a way of recruiting students who may not need as much financial aid as the average applicant. So think about it this way in terms of negotiating. You have very little negotiating leverage if you apply to a university early decision. So let's take College X, and you apply to College X, and you say, I want to apply to you under the early decision plan. College X doesn't have a great deal of incentive. In fact, there's very little incentive for the school to give you a generous financial aid package, because under the terms of early decision, if you're admitted, you have to go and withdraw your other applications. So if, like the gentleman before from Washington State or Oregon, who was asking about scholarships, in his situation, that would be a bad idea, because the most important thing for him is the scholarship offer. But let's assume there's someone who lives 2 or 3 miles from our friend in Washington State or Oregon, who is in a different economic situation and wants to take advantage of his economic position. Then, in such a case, then early decision may be the way to go for that family.
You write here there are over 25,000 high schools in the United States. Each one has a math superstar, a soccer standout, and a computer whiz. What does that tell us in the context of the big competition?
Well, that tells us that just because a student seems exceptional in your town doesn't mean that student is exceptional on a state or a regional or a national or even an international scale. To put this in some context, Stanford a few years ago rejected 2/3 of their applicants with perfect SATs. Now, you might say, well, that's Stanford. But the University of Pennsylvania has, in some years, in the last 10 years, I think 5 or 6 of those years, rejected more valedictorians than they've accepted. So it's not necessarily so that just because you're a soccer star at your high school that you're going to now be the soccer star at your future college.
Interesting. ACT test scores, the other exam besides the SAT, average scores on the ACT exam held steady for this year's graduating high school seniors, which is considered a sign of modest progress considering the pool of students taking the test continues to expand. Are there reasons to take the SAT as opposed to the ACT? And again, some schools lean heavily on one or the other, but if the school doesn't care, should students be selective about which they take?
Well, I think in a lot of ways the ACT is a better test because it actually measures how much you've learned in particular subjects. I think a question, if you don't mind me saying, is that I'm not sure whether or not we should be pushing the ACTs and the ACTs as much as we do. What we do know for sure is there is an incredible correlation between how well you do on standardized test scores and how wealthy you are. Now, if we want to choose students based on that factor, then I think we should promote the SATs and the ACTs more. I'm not sure what the SAT in particular measures. The ACT is a little bit better, but I don't think we should scrap the standardized test completely, because we do need some national scale to figure out how an A in Oklahoma compares to an A in Montana and how that compares to an A in Oregon. But I don't know whether or not the SAT and the ACT are really doing that. In my opinion, I think we want to be trying to figure out what students are actually learning in specific subjects that they're going to take in college.
More to come here as we talk tonight with Stephen Roy Goodman, the co-author of College Admissions Together. It is in paperback from Capital Books. 1-866-50-JIMBO. Stay with us. We'll be right back. The Jimbo Hannon Show. 1-866-50-JIMBO is the number. Our guest is educational consultant Stephen Roy Goodman, the co-author of College Admissions Together. It Takes a Family, in paperback from Capital Books. You have, among other things in here, a section on tips to minimize conflict and achieve better communication, like select a day and time to have a family discussion. Boy, with today's scheduling of young people, particularly the very type of young people who will be going to college, you got soccer practice, you got the drama club, you got this, you got that. That's going to be tough right off the bat, just getting everybody together.
Well, I think that is right. But I think it's also important to not keep saying the same thing over and over and over to teenagers. I think it's important to give teenagers a little bit of breathing room. And that's the reason in the book that we suggest that you should take a moment every week and set aside some time to have a college conversation without having your students be afraid. You don't want students to be afraid to come home and to have dinner with you to know that you're going to now confront them about why you haven't done the college essay.
Let's take a call from Henry in Bordentown, New Jersey, for our guest, Stephen Roy Goodman. Hello, Henry.
Hi, how are you?
We're well.
Good. My question for Stephen is, does he have any advice for a family, a parent of a child who has gone through undergraduate and wants to become a vet, a veterinarian, and any advice on how to get into vet school? There's only a few of them in the country, and they're very difficult to get into.
Well, yes, you're right. They are very difficult to get into, and in fact, most people may not know that it's in many ways it's much harder to even be a vet than it is to be a doctor. I had a student, actually, funny. It's funny you mentioned that you're from New Jersey. I had a student from New Jersey last year who is now in veterinary school, and he's enjoying it very much. The best advice I can give you on that, without knowing your circumstances, is to try to do things with animals, both large and small animals, to try to care for them now, because you want to be able to, in the admissions process, make the case that you can deal with both small and large animals. And a lot of people can't make that case.
Yeah, my daughter went to Rutgers for 4 years in animal science, and then she took a year off to work in an emergency animal hospital, and that's what she's doing right now. So she's getting that kind of experience. Having said that, though, it's no guarantee that you can really open the door to a vet school. I just don't know what the secret is to that, other than being handpicked by them. I don't know. Just get in line, or do you get in line? You just keep applying, or what do you do?
Well, there's no secret to being admitted to vet school. There's no secret to being admitted to medical school. There's no secret to being admitted to Princeton as an undergraduate. You can do everything right and simply not be admitted, or you might have to reapply the next year if you're not admitted. The best advice I can offer is to simply keep doing what it is that you're doing. Keep the stuff that she's doing sounds very good, but I would do more of it. And if she has the ability to do it, to do anything, to maybe write some papers about it, to maybe do some pseudo-academic articles about some of the work that she's doing, if at all possible, or to, if she needs the extra time to take more to do it for more than just a half a year or a year, unfortunately, that may be the price of admission in this case.
I understand.
Good luck. Good
thank
luck
you
to
very,
you, Henry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call. To amplify on what Henry brought up here, what about the rules put forward in college admissions together as they apply to graduate school? What are the differences?
The biggest difference in graduate admissions is that you can't make the case that I simply want to learn something. In undergraduate admissions, you can make the case that I'm interested in sociology. It's kind of interesting to me. I've read a couple of books about sociology, and now I want to study sociology. When you're applying to graduate school, either professional school or graduate school, you need to make the case that not only are you interested in that subject, but that you've done something tangible in that subject, which is why internships are so important, which is why it's so important for people, for especially young people and students, to get practical experience in the field that they're interested in. It doesn't have to be the most prestigious place in the country, but it needs to be a place where you can get some hands-on experience and you can work with some people who really have some understanding of that particular field. So, of course, then you develop an understanding of that particular field as well along the way.
Our guest is educational consultant Stephen Roy Goodman, who with Dr. Andrea Lehman has written College Admissions Together. It takes a family. It's in paperback from Capital Books. And you can learn more, by the way, on his website, which is topcolleges.com. Topcolleges.com. And good luck to all of you as you face this critical decision. We have more to come on the Jim Bohannon Show, by the way. So stay tuned, and we'll be back to discuss a variety of things right here at Westwood One.